And so Mr. Guy always tells them I'm not well enough dressed when I come to the meeting. So I will this jacket do. I'm already too hot. So that's our
subject. You've seen somebody like that little man there, or like me, but maybe with more facial hair, in a town centre, or maybe on TV, or I'm told that even at football matches. A prophet of doom, if you will. So the question is, and I'll press the right button, is it a horror story? Or is it a Bible message of hope? And if it is that Bible message of hope, what is that? And hopefully you all know, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but as a reminder, it's about waiting for something. Possibly New Jerusalem, as that picture tries to show. It's not a very good picture, but you get the idea. And the time when you might be able to sit down with the lamb and the lion in the future kingdom. So they're the choices, if the end is nigh. This title and subject was because I was reading something. And it was the most unlikely thing. It was a magazine. It was this magazine, Top Gear. And alongside the picture of the new sports car, which I can't remember which make it was, it said the following. The main calendar says the world will end in 2012. That's next year. And rather a lot of worrying forces do in fact appear to be converging, they said. Intense civil and economic unrest. Skyrocketing food and energy prices. And then they launched into their review of the car. But it makes it into a popular magazine about motoring. That people are a little worried about what's going on in this world. And I thought that was quite significant. But it does show us how far ingrained into popular culture the end is nigh is, doesn't it? And people have been talking about this for years, many, many years. But the world's not ended yet, has it? So are all these people wrong? I want to look at why people think the end is nigh and what the Bible actually says. And one of the key questions is, why do people get so convinced the end is nigh? I'd like to suggest it's for a couple of reasons. Mainly it's because they think that man is ruining the world, whether it's the greenhouse effect or some other environmental issue, or the fact that man will try and destroy it with all his bombs, or it's for religious reasons. But the religious reasons and the dates they come up with are down to individual interpretation of their own scriptures, whichever scriptures they are, though tonight I'm limiting myself to the Bible. They refer all of them to the end of the current world order and control to be taken away from man, and a judgment of good and bad resulting in reward or punishment. Unfortunately, however well intentioned all these people are, they damage the general world's view of religious believers when they're shown to be wrong. Let's talk about one of them this year. Harold Camping, he was called. On May the 21st, this year, the world should have ended, according to him. On the 22nd, a statement came out that maybe he got the calculation wrong and it should be the 21st of October. And I think the faster ones amongst you know that that date's missed as well. He didn't do us a good service, did he? Because the media had an absolute circus about it. They were there in Times Square checking out whether the world had ended or not, etc. And he even had these things. He had great big motorhomes driving round for a year before with this kind of billboard on it. It wasn't just one, there was loads of them. And people, his followers, had sold everything they got to live in these caravans, to buy them, to get them liveried up, and to drive them around America with these dates on. And they were all disappointed, weren't they? But it's not the first time this guy's done it. Apparently, according to him, the 31st of May 1988 was another date when the world ended. And it also ended on the 6th of September 1994. They're not new, these predictions, though, like this Harold, are they? We can go back in history. There was one Baptist leader, William Miller. He predicted the end of the world for October the 22nd, 1844. And that date actually became known as the Great Disappointment amongst all his followers. And at the other extreme was a guy called Ron Hardesky of New Jersey. He predicted the end of the world on February the 27th, 2004. It was his wife's 50th birthday. I'm not sure if that was a significant reason or what. But what actually happened was far, far sadder. The world didn't end. So Rod beat his wife to death with his Bible. He's now serving a life sentence. I found a list of 240 predictions we've already missed from various people. I did think about printing it out, but then I looked at it and it was huge. But you get the idea. Here's some of the ones that are still in the future, according to some people. Apparently some say that the end of certain calendars come in certain dates. I haven't gone into why, but it's out there on the internet proclaiming an end of some kind or another, according to someone. Planetary alignment's one that's, to me, quite amusing, because they say all the planets will be in a row and it'll mess up gravity and the calamity and the end of the world will happen. From what I understand when I've read about it, it's like going to make 0.0000 so many noughts, I can't remember, 1% difference to gravity pull on this Earth, so why would it make a blind bit of difference? But people get wound up about these things, don't they? Isaac Newton's an interesting one. I'd never come across that one before. And that was only publicised in 2003. Because somebody was going through his private working papers. This was never ever published by Isaac Newton. It was just some scribbled notes on a scrap of notepaper. And Isaac Newton didn't predict that it'd be 2060. What he predicted was it definitely wouldn't be before. Because he was so annoyed with people making predictions in his lifetime that he did various sums and said there was no way it could be before 2060, according to his calculation, just to try and stop them. But the key thing was it won't be before. He didn't say it would be in. Let's carry on. What does the Bible say? Got the same quote in two places. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. On Matthew 25, watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. So I'm a simple soul. I'm quite happy to accept that I can't work it out. I'm quite happy to accept that only God knows. And I'm hoping that you agree with me. In fact, I'd like to go further and say, it's really good that I don't know. Because let's think for a minute. If you knew the exact date of the return of Jesus, of the end of this world order, of the setting up of the kingdom, I think it would affect the way that you live your lives right now. I'd like to wager that we might not even be here if I was a betting man. Just imagine for a moment if Revelation chapter 1 started and said something slightly different. It said, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show his to his servants of things which must shortly come to pass, he sent and signified it by his angel unto the servant John, who bare record of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ, and of all the things he saw. And at verse 3, instead it said, and the return will be 31st of December 2030. Let's think about that for a moment. That date. If we knew in stone that was the date, would we live our lives differently? I think I have to admit I would. Because I've got a nasty feeling I might be out there for the next 18 years having a party. And about a day or two before, I might apologise for it all. And repent. And get baptised. It's just my suspicion of what I'd do. I don't know what you would do. But I think it would affect the way that we lived our lives if we knew that was the date. Let's bring the date forward. How about if it was the 31st of December next year? I still think I might do some different things, travel the world and do other things before sorting things out and putting my life in order. I still have that suspicion that's what I'd do. Okay. It's getting a bit close to home now, the end of this year. I think maybe it's getting a bit closer now, it's only a couple of weeks away. So I don't think that would affect my behaviour too much, although maybe I'd rush around a bit more and worry about things and whether my life's in order. But I don't think I'll be out partying in the next fortnight. What if it was midnight tonight? I'll leave you to think about it. But the point is, we don't know. It's not written down. It's not listed for us. There isn't a countdown in the sky listing up that we can look at every morning to check the countdown. We don't know when it is, do we? And I think it's quite fortunate for someone like me that we don't know. That we have to live each day as if it's our last, as if we're ready for the return of the Lord. Today, we have to treat as the last day to get our house in order, or our last hour, or our last minute. And it's our last chance to tell others, isn't it? God expects us to make a lifetime commitment, doesn't he? Not simply the day before a published date. God requires us to demonstrate our belief throughout our lifetime. And hence, that's why we don't know. I always wondered what would be interesting is if the pictures from the moon were different to what we've seen published. I mean, I was only two at the time, but instead of seeing a picture of the Earth, if we saw something that made us have proof that God existed, what if they actually took that picture and they realised that the world was in God's hands? The time's in God's hands. Control is in God's hands. The world would think very differently, wouldn't it? But as it is, we don't know. Return of the Lord is in God's hands, just as the earth is in God's hands. But this generation, it's seeing prophecy fulfilled. The words that were read for us from Matthew 24, we skipped quite a lot of them, but we got the general idea, I trust. Read them all through later, at your leisure. But we've got it. Earthquakes, volcanoes, famine, war, environmental disaster, terrorism, financial crisis. We've got them all, haven't we? And it's gone from, you know, individual credit card debt to businesses that failed, to great big banks that went wrong, didn't they? And now we've basically got bankrupt countries. And men don't know what to do. Men's hearts are failing them for fear. They don't know what to do, and now they're having an argument about whether our leader was right or wrong in what he did with the meeting in the EEC in the last day or so. And even within his own party, they're arguing about whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision. But these things are beyond man's control, aren't they? Man's able to make a mess, but he can't fix it. But I'm not going to go through all of these things. They've been talked about before from here. So I'm going to look at a different side. And there it is. It's from Daniel, chapter 12. And it says there, as part of it, do look it up later, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never has been since there was a nation till that time. And it's talking about the time of the end. And to Daniel it says, but you, Daniel, shut up the books and words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. And they're the two things I want to look at for a few minutes. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Let's start with knowledge shall increase, the second of those. Some would say knowledge increasing is about the fact that we start to understand the Bible better. And that's quite a possibility, and I think it is true, because we've got more access to it in our generation than ever before. But I think it also applies to just world's knowledge, the world's understanding of its environment, of science. So the intellectual knowledge, if you like, of the human race has increased massively. We're living in what they call the information age. And we should be on the information superhighway or whatever that is. But even the most sceptical mind's got to accept that knowledge is expanding in all areas of man's endeavours, almost. I've seen some stats that say 80% of the world's total knowledge has been discovered in the last 10, 20, 30 years. And a huge percentage of all the scientists that ever lived are currently alive right now. How about some of the major advances just since the 19th century? At the time of Daniel, and up until the 18th century, we didn't even have the printing press. So the availability of knowledge was very limited because it was so difficult to write it down other than longhand. Apparently the total storage of knowledge at the moment is doubling every 8 years. There's 500,000 books published every year. What everyone finds to write about baffles me. Apparently the weekday of an average newspaper has more information in it than somebody in the 17th century would have come across in their whole lifetime. Just one newspaper. Because they didn't have access to news. They had just people coming around telling them about things. The internet allows me to get to hundreds of international newspapers. And it's there at my fingertips. We can now clone animals. There's a tiny little chip that you can put in things that allows you to track things globally. And the list goes on. I'd like to suggest that knowledge is causing some of the very issues that we're seeing now. Man's gone from fighting with sticks and stones, hasn't he? To swords and catapults, and that was at an advance. But now he can move things wirelessly and fly bombs across continents. It means a man sat at a computer screen, nice and safe and secure, I was going to say at home, but in the Pentagon or wherever. He can, by remote control, destroy a city. Is this progress? Well, man thinks so. Man's gone from one-on-one combat to global reach of destroying cities. It's amazing. The financial issues, I'd like to say they're actually probably fueled by the fact that we know too much about the finances of every other country and every other city, every other bank and so on. The globalisation and the information globalisation means that everyone knows too much and it allows people to manipulate currencies in all sorts of ways. And we get that silly thing that a bank manager, a traditional bank manager, would say, well, they're just daft, because years ago you had to go and grovel and plead to your bank manager to borrow some money for a house, and if he didn't think you could afford to pay it back, he'd just send you on his way. Now these bankers make decisions on lending not just for one house, but thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of houses in America, and it's somebody in England who's choosing whether to do it. And then they wonder why they go toxic debt and bad debt, and all of a sudden they lose their very shirt, if you like. Let's bring examples of knowledge nearer to home, shall we? We can buy music on the internet. They used to come on records, on vinyl. They progressed to CD and tape. But there's a tiny little card on this telephone in some little slot somewhere. Apparently I've got 100 albums somewhere inside this. And that's only one of the things that does. The world's just moved on. Television was invented in the 1920s, but it wasn't widespread then. I know my parents bought one in about 1969 or something. And in the Second World War, how do we know what was going on in the war? They had newsreels. What was that? Oh, they actually had a reel of news that was sent round to the cinemas. And that's how you could find out, or you sat and listened to the wireless, as it was called. The world has changed, hasn't it? We've got medical knowledge. It's amazing what we can do. We can scan inside your very body. We've talked about warfare and remote control of it. I started to mention this, the telephone. Because for those that are younger, they're confused because they think that that's always been around. I was just working it out in the car when I came. I think I had my first mobile phone when I was 25. Because before I was 25, the mobile phone came in this massive red box. And when you were driving around, you'd spot one and pull over and you'd go in it, and this thing with a wire on, you had to pick up and put money in it and scrat around for 10p's. And you could phone home, and then you drive another few hundred miles, and you repeat the exercise again. But now we have this thing. No wires, no nothing. Wherever I'm supposedly in England, mostly depending on the coverage, I can make a phone call. People get upset when they lose the signal to this, because they think it's their right to have a signal wherever they go. Yet, I was 25 before the first one was invented, and it all had 4 hours battery life. The one I had, but I know they came out earlier than that. But they're in great big suitcases with car batteries to run them. Now the world has gone on so much. This plays video. How's that work? It's like it's got a television set inside it and a video recorder, because it takes pictures and video as well. It's got a music player, we talked about that. It's got a calculator. It's got an alarm clock, all in this little tiny thing, and they make smaller ones. And effectively it's a computer, and it's got a lot of the functions that's got. With the right little box, I wouldn't need to have brought this tonight, but I haven't bought the right little box. We know so much more, don't we? Let's talk about going to and fro. A lot of these inventions have allowed us to do all sorts of things. The invention of the car, the invention of the aeroplane, the invention of the train. We can rush around in ways we've never thought of before. We've even been to the moon with our great knowledge. They did some fantastic calculations and they've landed on the moon. In 1969, apparently, I know we have to commemorate it. And for those that can't read, It says, "Hello, Houston. It seems that the cow who jumped over the moon didn't quite make it after all." But we laughed, but in 1969, man went to the moon. That's incredible to me. We can travel in ways we've just come to thought of years ago. Man's major mode of transport was the horse. Then we got the horseless carriage. And then we got things like the steam traction engine as well. But eventually we got to the Bugatti Veyron, amongst other things. There's some traffic. You know, we've got all sorts of things on there, haven't we? We've got people clinging on to the train because there's so many of them that need to be transported along. They can't even fit on it, can they? They're all hanging off and on the roof and everywhere. We get so hooked up with our cars, we make a mess and you can't move anywhere. And that, believe it or not, is flowing traffic just about. And that's normal daily life for some people. But there you go, another way to get into space. But man runs to and fro, doesn't he? And this thing goes over 250 mile an hour. How would they have thought about that 100 years ago? From the speed of a horse to 250 plus miles an hour in a road legal car. And this bullet train's ridiculously fast too. It allows us to get anywhere really quick. Or we've got aeroplanes. We can fly. How's that work? Some years ago, if you claimed to be able to fly, they'd have burnt you as a witch or drowned you or something. So it's a good job Yvonne wasn't around at those times. There's going to be 1 billion cars, they predict, by 2025. 1 billion. That's a ridiculous number. And there we are, running to and fro in these things. They're all meant to save us time, but I don't feel that I'm saving any time. I don't know about you. I was running to and fro this morning, and that confused, and grabbed my shoes and came to the meeting, and not one of you said, either you're very polite, or maybe you just didn't notice, but I had completely mismatched black shoes. They were completely different.
We expect nothing less from you.
Yvonne was killing herself with laughter. I've managed to get to the same pair tonight. But I was just not thinking about rushing down to the meeting. We rushed to and fro. Yes, I just didn't even get my shoes right. Crazy. Some statistics. This is just trains. I always thought the London Underground was busy. I remember going on it aged 18. I was trying to get across London to go to a job interview in Southampton or something. And I couldn't believe how close people were standing to me. It was horrid. It only makes number 9 in that list for the number of passenger journeys by city. And Moscow is nearly 4 times as many. That's just amazing. Apparently there was 1.6 billion passenger flights last year. That's passenger flights, including the passenger, if you see what I mean. 1 million flights were made, actual aeroplane flights were made in America alone. 747 can apparently fly 400 passengers and over 8,000 miles without stopping. We can get to Australia with one little stop. That's the other side of the world. It's stunning. Apparently when you're orbiting the Earth, you can get around the Earth in 80 minutes flat. That's not bad going, is it? And now apparently they've got their eyes set on Mars, and they recently had some guys who were practicing living in confined space for as long as it would take to fly to Mars just to see if it was possible. They're practicing on Earth. Here's a video I've shown before, and I'll show it again. poke and it'll start playing. Doesn't want to. That's a shame. Oh well. The idea was it would show you all those little like yellow dots flying around and changing. And it shows you 24 hours of flights in this world. And those dots race around the earth over the 24 hours. And it's amazing. But every one of those little dots, and you can't even see the dots in places because there's that many of them. That's just currently a snapshot of what's flying. Amos, chapter 12. And they shall wander from sea to sea, and from the north even to the east, and they shall run to and fro and seek the word of the Lord and shall not find it. That's a frightening verse for me. With all this technology of running around, they can't find the word of the Lord. Maybe the context is clear if we read the verse before. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I'll send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread, nor a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of the Lord. That's the famine. People won't be interested. But these verses are talking about a future time when man's finally seen the error of his ways, but it's too late. So the big question remains, is the end nigh? Well, yes, I would say so, pretty soon, I don't know when. Because man isn't that interested in God, is it? Are they? And we have the media parading people like that poor Harold on our screens going, well, go on then, it didn't end. And they mock him. They laugh at him. They scoff at him. They laugh at... Many in this world would laugh at you for telling them that you believe in God and you believe that Jesus Christ will return and set up a kingdom on this earth. But the media and these people are actually fulfilling Bible prophecy. Let's look at 2 Peter 2 and verse 3. I am stirring up your sincere mind by the way of reminder that you should remember the predictions of the holy prophets and the commandment of the Lord and Saviour through your apostles, knowing this first of all, and that's the key bit, isn't it, that scoffers will come in the last days with scoffing, following their own sinful desires. They will say, where is the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all things are continuing as they were from the beginning of creation. That's the bit they wouldn't say. Because they wouldn't say from the beginning of creation, would they, the scoffers? They'd say since the Big Bang. The world has forgotten that God created the earth. It goes out of its way, in fact, to try and deny the very existence of God. I think that's an amazing sign that the return is soon. God has destroyed the inhabitants of the earth once in a flood. We have the quote from 2 Peter 3 again. For they deliberately overlooked this fact, that the heavens existed long ago, and the earth was formed out of the water, and through the water by the word of God, and by the means of these, the world that existed was deluged with water and perished in the time of Noah. God is to judge the inhabitants once again. But it says, by the same word, the heavens and earth are now exist, are stored up for fire, being kept until the day of judgment and destruction of the ungodly. Again, we're not being told when. In fact, we're actually reminded that God doesn't see the time as the way we do, because he created it. He's in control of it. He can do what he wants with it, if you think about it. Do not overlook this one fact, beloved. That with the Lord one day is as of 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. God is in control of time. How about this? Does it sound familiar? 2 Timothy 2. I think this is a blindingly uncomfortable and accurate view of today. Understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people, it says, for among them are those who creep into households and capture weak women, burdened with sins and led astray by various passions, always learning and never able to arrive at a knowledge of the truth. That's the frightening bit to me. Always learning and never able to arrive at a knowledge of truth. Or the truth. It does sound like today, doesn't it? You only have to read your newspapers to see that people are being brutal or abusive or disobedient to their parents or to the state or whatever. I'm not going to quote some of the things I've read in the last week in the newspapers. You might have seen them as well, but they're horrible. The things that man does to man or to their own family. And for anyone who's checking, that was 2 Timothy and chapter 3. I'd like to talk about a side effect of this knowledge increase. The King James Bible. The very fact that we've invented the printing press means that every one of us can have a copy of the Bible ourselves. The internet, it allows people to get to the Bible from all over the place. It's pervasive, this superhighway, isn't it? The important thing that it says and was read to us, but he shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then the end shall come. Are we reaching the point that with the internet and with the printing press, we can say that everyone's got access to the Bible? Has it been preached in all the world now? And is then the end very nigh? There's leaflets here. There's a list of them. They're at the back. Do read them. They are relevant to this subject. But read them with the Bible, not instead of it. John 3:16, you see this held up at sporting events. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And it continues, For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but the world through him should be saved. It should make us happy and joyful that soon God will set up his kingdom on earth and sort out the mess that man has created. I thought this picture summed it up well, because I could almost feel that that was a picture of the kingdom in the distance where the sun was being rising up. And they're only approachable through the waters of baptism, isn't it, the kingdom? And through God's mercy and the actions of his Son that we all need to find out about. I'd like to leave you with this thought. The world is in God's hands. The end of this world is at his choice, under his control. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then the end shall come. Thank you for listening.